All right, let's say names. Domio.
Domio.
Bob.
Bob.
Marta.
Marta.
Neil Ju.
Jim.
Jim.
Bruce.
Bruce.
David.
David.
Suzanne.
Mary.
Mary.
Pat.
Frankie.
Frankie.
Molly.
Molly.
Yeshe.
Yeshe.
Dave.
Dave.
Richard.
Richard.
Mark.
Mark.
Diane.
Diane.
Robin.
Robin.
Chuck.
Chuck. Chuck.
Rat.
Rat. I'm just looking. She looked up.
So let's just take a moment to appreciate the fact that we're all here. We have this sangha composed of all of these unique individuals, and I don't know about you, but sometimes I think about, you know, the importance of human relationships, and I think of them kind of in theory, and then periodically I look around and realize, oh right, these relationships! these are them!
Okay, thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Good. So,
Showcats
will
be
meeting on announcement. All right. So next Sunday is, that's the 10th, it's Daylight Savings, and the Children's Program is next Sunday. And then the Sunday after that is the Susho Person Ceremony for Shoketsu, which I don't need to explain, right?
Not yet. her graduation ceremony, she'll be presenting a verse and taking questions.
And then the following Sunday is the 10th anniversary celebration for Brightway, the fundraiser, from 5 o'clock. No, yeah, 5 to 8. That's it.
And I encourage you to please come to the fundraiser. Frankie, what were we about? Well, like, we're about maybe like 10 tickets away from...
Maybe not even that as of this morning.
And, you know, to really safely break, you know, pay for the cost of the event, we're about 10 tickets away.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure we are going to meet that. But if you want to help us feel more confident about that, by all means, go home and register.
I also, several of us are planning to spend the night there. We've got reservations for rooms. And so if anyone would like to do that, it might be fun to, you know, really splurge and treat yourself to a warm outdoor pool in the morning.
And they have wonderful breakfast.
Go to breakfast with us. Marta's going, I'm going. So make your reservation.
I'm fine.
If you want.
you get the tickets online?
No.
Yes. On the website, there's a, you know, register now. Okay. And basically, you know, I mean, it's going to ask for your address, but you don't have to give that. It's just your name, contact info, and then because it's a ideal contribution scenario where it's, you know, suggested $40, but you can give less or more. Then you just basically say what you're going to be given, how, PayPal or check or whatever. And then we know. And then it does take you to a link to PayPal where you can pay if you want to use that.
Mm-hmm. Or can we just bring money?
You can also just, you can register and say that you're going to pay by check. And it will take you to the PayPal link and you just ignore it. And then just, you can just bring a check and just say what it's for.
Okay. And just a suggestion to carpool. Meet at BWZ. Some people may want to meet here in carpool over there. Yeah.
And there will be some interesting things to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making 10 ensos. This is an enso
my.
That are about this big, and they're going to start at $40. And all the donation, I made 10 of them, and all the donation will go to Brightway. And I've made a small dog. That looks just like
Suka. Oh.
So,
how much is that?
I have the excited, but anyway, so whatever that I bring will go the right way.
So that it's, there's an auction?
Is it going to be a live auction?
No, it's a silent,
silent,
a dignified
auction.
Silent auction.
Okay. Okay.
Where there's little pieces,
thank you.
Little pieces of paper out, and you,
okay.
And you, but it still can be kind of fun,
oh, yeah.
And exciting. You know, you get your little number, and you know, signed, and then you go over and like, has anybody bid me up yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So fun. You bid up, and then.
And did I see somewhere that there's going to be a wine?
Yeah. Yes, so that'll be part of the silent auction, right? So,
yeah, we're encouraging people to, you know, get outside of the box a little bit and think about things that they might want to auction off that are, that there's special talent they could auction off, who knows, ukulele lessons or, not that we do that, but, I don't know, maybe somebody could be a Mondo mentor or something like that. Anyway,
no? All right. So, and I was going to just mention that I think some people are going to Market of Choice for lunch, and I got a little bit stuck, and so Frankie and I are going to look at my laptop, so anybody with either some PowerPoint or slideshow presentation or Google skills might want to stop by and see if we have any questions.
Yeah,
this is
great.
This is a slideshow she's putting together for the event.
Yes.
So you're asking for help.
Well, technical help.
Yeah, technical help as well.
Great.
And this is combined with the lunch.
Or we could sit at a separate table and have a conversation.
Yeah, we'll sit at a separate table.
Anybody who you have a choice. I think we're still doing lunch, but I just wanted to let everybody know that we have this little side work project.
Just a quick reminder, book group this month is on the 23rd, actually on Saturday morning. It's a week later than usual. So keep it in mind, that'll be a busy weekend.
All right. Okay.
All right. The microphone is now on. So today, I want to talk about approaching your practice as a lifelong path of growth and transformation. And if any of you listen to my podcast, I did just do an episode on this, but I find that just in a different place and to a different audience, it all just comes out differently. So we all have different motivations for practice or reasons why we practice. And in general, what we're doing here is positive, healthy, and beneficial. So it really doesn't matter what your motivation is. Your motivation can be that you want to be more mindful so you eat better and lose weight. Fine. Your motivation might be that you want to achieve great enlightenment and become a famous teacher. It's like this path in a way is self-correcting. So, you know, no matter what your motivations start off, it's beneficial. So in a way that it you don't have to view your path as this light or your practice as this lifelong path of growth and transformation if you don't want to. However, that is traditionally how Buddhism has been taught. So today I'm going to argue that even if you're not initially inclined to see your practice this way, you may want to adopt this way of framing it. To really see, I mean, to some extent this is about creating a narrative, but it's not a narrative you really have to concretize or memorize or stick to, but to have a kind of a sense of narrative about your life, you know, and at what age did you start, you know, wondering about deeper things, and at what points in your life did you really the bedrock of your assumptions were shaken and new questions happened, and you know, what point did you encounter inspiring teachers or paths, and it made you, you know, change your direction? And then, you know, at what point did you commit to a path? And, you know, how do you feel you're progressing on it? Have you learned more? What has changed? What has improved? So looking at things this way, in a conscious way, facilitates growth, gives shape and direction to our lives, and also ennobles our lives, because whatever we encounter, whatever happens, even if it's a period of laziness and complacency or distraction or whatever, anything that happens is part of this, you know, your spiritual adventure. So, I'm not sure you can think about this. What kind of person are you? And I'm doing two categories here, but you don't necessarily fall into one or the other. But at least two simple categories is: do you admit dissatisfaction with yourself and your life and the way that you function or you're able to respond to the world? Admit your dissatisfaction and aim for self-improvement. Or are you someone who's kind of skeptical of self-improvement? The whole self-improvement thing can be pretty silly and pointless. Kind of an obsession of idealistic and self-obsessed people. That's kind of my husband's point of view. most of us probably feel one way or the other at different times. And I think it's good to be skeptical of self-improvement. There are good reasons to be skeptical of that. When working toward goals or ideals, we often become either obsessed or discouraged. It's often very difficult. We set, you know, resolutions, and then we fail, and then we're discouraged. It often seems fruitless, and, you know, a lot of times our self-improvement goals, honestly, are not all that noble. I mean, a lot of our goals are about improving our physical appearance, improving our social attractiveness, in a way, our social skills, so people like us better, and so our relationships are more harmonious. Sometimes they're habits that will just make our daily lives go more smoothly. I mean, they're kind of a little bit self-centered goals. And if we make our happiness contingent on achieving a certain amount of progress or whatever, then we're pretty much setting ourselves up for dissatisfaction. Because, I mean, you achieve a goal, then there's another goal and whatever. So anyway, there's a lot of reasons to be skeptical of self-improvement. And then I think most of us have experienced, whether through Buddhist practice or another practice, the joy of profound acceptance of the way that we are, who we are, the way our lives are. You know, there's a huge relief, and actually it can even free us up for more change than this kind of trying for the change. And I think this is why certain Buddhist messages are very popular. You know, just be in the moment. There's nothing to gain. You already have Buddha nature. Enlightenment is right here and now. It's only our desire that gets in the way. And so these messages are true, but our practice has to have both sides. So, you know, this is that old absolute and relative again, or the essential and the contingent. Acceptance is really about tapping into that absolute or essential side. Everything, you know, in the grand scheme of things, if you're doing the best you can, it's all okay. And it's valuable to tap into a sense of that. But that's just that one side. And on the other side, like I think Shizuki Roshi said, you're perfect as you are, and you could use some improvement. So our real goal is to honor both sides and see them as complementary, not opposing. And I don't know, I have this sense that if we don't learn to see our lives and practice as path, that we decrease the likelihood that we're going to make progress. there's a certain value that kind of deliberateness and intent can bring to our path of growth. So, just to kind of talk about the origins of the sense of path, you know, the Buddha embarked on his spiritual quest because he was dismayed about the human condition. He saw how vulnerable we are to the whims of fate. One moment, you know, depending on what's going on in our lives, blissed out, content, secure, joyful, healthy, and the next moment, full of grief, fear, you know, brought on by loss, illness, death. And I mean, in a sense, these kinds of oscillations are just, they're just a natural part of life. But the Buddha saw how often we are completely knocked about by these things. We're in complete denial about impermanence when things are good, and in complete despair when things are bad. So, you know, he's just like, we're just kind of doomed to be knocked about like that. And then he also saw how frequently we're operating under the influence of karma, acting out of habitual patterns of body, speech, and mind, and thereby perpetuating greed, anger, and ignorance. So he practiced. This was his big question, and he practiced diligently for many years, and then upon his awakening, he saw an alternative way for human beings to live. So he saw if we settle down in meditation, calm the mind, we can see reality more clearly. We can recognize how we generate much of our own suffering by craving the things we like and feeling aversion for the things we don't like. And once we see that, we have the option of starting to learn to let go of grasping and aversion, thereby relieving the worst of our suffering. And reflecting deeply on our own minds and actions, we can also recognize what actions lead to positive outcomes and those that lead to negative ones. And once we see that, we can work on that. Well, how do we make more skillful choices? How do we choose to do the things that lead to positive outcomes? I mean, it all sounds very straightforward when you describe it. Well, I mean, if you described that as the Buddhist path to one of your friends who knows nothing about Buddhism, they'd be like, duh. I mean, all right, so you see what is, you know, leads to positive outcomes, and then you do that, and like, whatever. But the point is that it's not that easy to actually do. Like, in theory, it's very simple and straightforward, but it's not that easy to actually do. So the radical thing about the Buddha's teaching is not that, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. Then, so his very first teaching was about the Eightfold Path. This is how you do it. This is how, as a human being, you can start to actually do those things, start to actually move toward those goals. And the Eightfold Path, which I won't go over in detail now, but it basically has three different aspects. It has appropriate behavior, appropriate insight, you know, an understanding. And then there's these two aspects that I see as about walking the path themselves. So there's right resolve and right effort. And really that right resolve or right intention, I feel like that's where it really lines up to what I'm talking about path right now, that implies that you do have a direction that you want to go. You do have a goal, if you will. So the goal, as presented by the Buddha, was nirvana, which was complete liberation from the cycle of suffering. no more generation of negative karma. And I think for most of us, that's like, I don't know, doesn't seem like a very relevant goal. Like, what is that anyway? And I don't expect to be able to achieve anything like that. What, it's a kind of a ethereal thing. But if we think of this more as an ideal or direction for our lives, it doesn't really matter whether perfection or Buddhahood or whatever is literally possible for us or for any human being. Whether the perfection is possible, there's a long way between here and there. Like, there's plenty of room for improvement. There's really no chance that any of us are going to run out of stuff to do if we just keep on moving in that direction. And that can only have a positive and beneficial effect on us and the world if we're all just moving toward that ideal. So I like to suggest that we rephrase the ideal of Buddhahood or enlightenment or liberation or being a Zen master for ourselves. What is our deepest aspiration? And remember, the spiritual aspirations have, I mean, this may not need to be said, but it has nothing to do with hoping for future good fortune for ourselves or others, health, financial security, being more likable, even stuff like getting justice. That's not the nature of aspiration, that you hope something is going to happen out there. Our deepest aspirations are about how we want to live, given the life that we have. How do we want to perceive and understand and respond to the world? What choices do we make about the limited aspects of our lives we have any say over? Do you want release from depression, anxiety, hatred, fear, or regret? Do you want to free yourself from limiting or harmful behavior patterns? Do you want greater intimacy with other people and with all of life? Do you want your speech and actions to be more authentic or skillful? Do you want to manifest some of the selfless compassion and bravery of Mother Teresa or Martin Luther King Jr.? Do you want a direct personal experience of emptiness or suchness or Buddha nature? So however grand or bold your aspirations, Buddhism says, go for it. And we want to, when we're formulating these aspirations, it's important not to think in terms of what we think we could actually do. That's the beauty of kind of the Bodhisattva vow that says, well, I don't know how many lifetimes it's going to take, but this is what I'm aiming at. Because in a way, if we just think in terms of like, well, realistically, I think I can get a little less impatient. I don't know, that's not really an aspiration. You know, that might be a goal, but, you know, the aspiration is the direction. You know, it's in a way, it's better if it's not even a sense that it's something that we can grasp. And it's extremely important to not underestimate our own potential for awakening and liberation. Because from the Buddhist point of view, to do that is no less negative than if you decided someone else wasn't up to it. And we might secretly doubt someone else's abilities, capabilities, but from the Buddhist point of view, everyone is capable of practice, and there is no limit on what anyone can achieve. The only question is how long it might take. So that's where I kind of, you know, I'm agnostic about multiple lifetimes, but that's kind of a sweet metaphor for this if you just think however many lifetimes it's going to take. you know, it's difficult to imagine this person becoming enlightened in this lifetime, but, you know, they're on a path. So just as we would never disparage someone else's potential, we should never disparage our own. So in terms of my kind of like practical aspects of learning to think of your practice as path, to engage your practice as path, I mean, I think one of the things, and we don't have to get really concrete about our aspirations, they're kind of a moving target, but I think to periodically check in with your aspirations, and if they do take the form of, you know, a vow or something written or something like that, that is certainly fine. It's good to cultivate a sense of spiritual urgency. So this is, I've talked about this before, this is a samvega. It's a particular Buddhist emotion, which is most easily translated as spiritual emergency, but it's kind of complex. It's a sense of really seeing the kind of the pointlessness of life as it's usually lived, and aspiring to something else, and also feeling not just like life as it's usually lived out there, but like life as I usually also live it, you know. So there's a sense of personal culpability, and then just a determination to find some other way. And one of the ways that we cultivate samvega and this spiritual urgency is to cultivate impermanence. On the one hand, we can call up our aspirations in that positive sense, but we also want to, this is why Buddhists, you know, with the five thoughts, I am of the nature to grow old, I am of the nature to become ill, we remind ourselves of these things basically just as an antidote to that denial that, you know, when things are going well, we, that's gonna last forever, I have plenty of time. Approaching self-improvement as selfless improvement, energetically embracing a path of practice that in theory leads to greater things, committing the self to the necessary hard work, sacrifice, and periodic discomfort, but not expecting anything out of the effort for the self. So it's not about like, oh, that'll be really satisfied and happy when that happens, or people, I'll get kudos for that. It's just, you're just doing it for the sake of doing it. Doing it because this kind of effort is the way to live. And this also means that we may not congratulate ourselves or get all prideful about our success, but that also means that we don't have to beat ourselves up for our supposed failures or inadequacy. It's the effort that counts, so you just get back to the work. And then I think just learning to frame, you can just kind of adopt this as a practice, learning to frame your practice and life as a path. And I think maybe our term student program helps us do that a little bit. You know, we have to come up with a spiritual outline to share with people. It's like, okay, so then this happened and that happened, and, you know, what has formed you, what has informed you. And I think, I mean, you can do this privately, but one of the best ways to do this practice is with each other. You know, and with a teacher, to check in with a teacher, and this is what's been happening and this is how it's been going. But also I'm hoping that this manifests in conversations with Dharma friends and Sangha members. I mean, this is one of my favorite things when I first encountered Sangha, is like, you know, how's your practice? I mean, when you're asking somebody how have you been doing, it's like you want to hear, you know, like you read the latest chapter of the novel, the spiritual, you know, adventure novel. Well, like, you know, and then like challenges being faced, difficulties, confusion, you know, that's just meat for the story. That's like, interesting, wow, and how are you dealing with that, and how are you practicing with that? And then sometimes there's something, you know, you've learned something, you've gained an insight from some difficulty or challenge. So having to speak about it with other people and put it in these terms helps us look at it as a path. And then I think, forming vows and intentions is one way to work with this. And then probably recognizing the path isn't straight. That, you know, if, like, in a way you can't not be on your path. So there's sometimes you have a real sense of like, all right, I know what my practice is. This is what I want out of it. I have a real sense of purpose and clarity. And then, stuff got busy. And, you know, like, it feels like you wandered off the path and went into the weeds and who knows what. And then, you know, well, sometime later, a few months, a year, whatever, you're like, oh, right. And then you feel like you're back on the path. But, you know, your path just went like this. And that's also why it helps, I think, also in accepting other people and seeing, you know, recognizing that, I mean, from the Buddhist point of view, we are all on that path of growth in a way we can't be. So if somebody looks like they might be going over like this, we can have a certain sense of patience for them because they may need to make that digression in order to continue on their way. So I will leave it there. Thoughts or comments or questions?
I like your path, the last bit there where, you know, it's like great rivers, even little tiny streams, they rarely go straight to the sea. They always wander over here, and they come back, leaving oxbows over here, various things. So it would be a very natural thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Branching streams into darkness.
Yes.
Can you repeat what you said? I mean, it just kind of hit me and I liked it, but I'm not sure how to put it back into the word. You don't congratulate yourself at the same time that you don't have to beat yourself
up. Right, right.
You said that.
So selfless improvement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can have aspirations that are positive. You know, we really do want to be less, you know, indulge our anger less and hurt people less, or we want to be more honest or supportive, or, I mean, there's noble aspirations, but Once we start to get into the beating ourselves up because, you know, once again we've, you know, broken our intention or whatever, I don't know, I feel like that's a sign that we're going into the kind of shallow self-concern aspect of it. And that's really where the precept, for me, the do not dwell on past mistakes, create wisdom from ignorance, is like, we just go... I mean, this all has to happen within the context of practice, where we notice the effects of our actions, we take responsibility for them, we have committed to the precepts, you know, like we're within the matrix of practice, so we don't have to dwell on past mistakes. So we can go, sorry about that, I'll really try to learn from that and do better next time. Moving on, you know, and then we don't have to hold on to it, because we can trust the practice that we will create wisdom from ignorance just by facing it and moving on.
Let me see if I can articulate this. So it seems to me there's also though something in between those two, which is yeah, that one worked. Yeah, that's it. That, you know, the honesty of that was an
that was an on point versus off point. So it isn't either or. You either screwed up or you succeeded, but some action or some event has been consistent with your aspiration.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe then you don't dwell on it, but it seems to me like it's worthwhile to acknowledge it.
Yeah.
So I'm rereading Shunryo Suzuki's Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, and I came across this sentence where he says, before summer ends, fall is here. And it just like all of a sudden saw this little lighter I felt or whatever. And I said, hey, you know, A, I'm capable of insight. Here it is. This has some kind of meaning for me. And not only does it make me feel like this whole book was worth rereading, but it seemed to connect with a notion of importance that I had some tiny little grasp about. And you know, it's like a lot of Zen for me, paradoxical. On the one hand, very small and maybe insignificant, on the other, fraught with potential for greater significance at the same time. But I was really happy that I decided to reread this book. Now, who knows, but will ultimately be the import. I don't know.
And do you have Dharma friends that you can tell about that kind of thing?
Oh, folks here.
Goya.
Pardon?
I said here, Goya.
I mean, it just, one thing that struck me is the notion that it's this idea of wholeness. One could interpret it. Before summer ends, fall is here. Well, that maybe that we should be sad because of that. But somehow when I finished it, in that instant, I wasn't feeling sad. It was more of, wow, yes, this is, the wheel turns, but it's all a part of, it's a whole thing. It's whole. You can separate out, I suppose, if you want. You can talk about spring and summer and fall and winter, but all of those are part of this whole thing that we call life, existence. And what are we going to do in terms of our relationship to this reality? And that has, for me, that had content and meaning.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, actually, so I'm wondering if I could explore just like a theological reflection I've encountered lately that was kind of brought to mind at this moment because of what you said about progress, but also kind of I think relates to the quote that you just brought up from Suzuki Roshi, so that's kind of funny, but something that I've been thinking about is how in the New Testament they talk about the difference between chronos time and kairos time, that we live in like there's two different kinds of time that we exist in any moment. And in the West, I think that we're more inclined to assume that, you know, time moves linearly, that we have a past behind us and a future ahead of us, and there's this kind of imagined present that we assume would be kind of being between those two things. But in other contexts, like in the Hebrew tradition, the past is actually localized in front of us because you can see the past, but the future is behind us because you can see it. And so I'm just thinking about how this idea of progress feels like a property to me of chronos time, which is that there's this belief that we can say, this thing that happened to me is not me anymore. I'm closing the door on that, and I'm making a choice to be something different. And, like, that's not an unreal experience. It's a real experience, and it's an important one to have. I think that's one of those moments of, like, you come to practice because you're, like, I have this hope and this belief that something is different, it's possible for my life. But I also think that there's moments where, so the property of Chronos is difference, and then there, I think, a property of Kairos is these moments of transformation or conversion, you know, to literally be turned around, and then suddenly the past is in front of us, it's no longer behind us. And, like, we come to realize that we are also nothing that we've never been anything other than what we actually are this whole time, if that makes sense. So what I like about what you said, what you've been saying, is that I really appreciated all of your comments about what it's like to live in Chronos time and how important it is that we fully commit ourselves to that experience of time, of making a goal and following through with it. But I wonder if one of the reasons why that's so important is because we can't really experience these other experiences of time, Kairos time, of realizing that a thing has ever been different than what it is, unless we fully commit ourselves to this idea of progress. And connecting that to this Shibo you brought up, I kind of felt that in there a little bit of, you know, we can experience the seasons in a linear way, and then also they're not that separate from each other. Like, they've always just been what they've been, just that whole experience of life that you're talking about. So, anyway.
I think that's, I didn't know anything about those two different kinds of time, and I mean, I'm not surprised that in deep spiritual traditions, you know, they have their own ways of portraying the, you know, absolute and relative, and these, why does our reality seem to have these different, you know, these different aspects to it, and yet they're, like, simultaneously true, and that's why, you know, if we were only focused on path, I don't know. I mean, I guess this would be an old, okay spiritual tradition, but I wouldn't get all that much out of it. Would it just be a big, long self-improvement project? You know, be kind of like, okay, I guess. But somehow, you know, that, like you were saying, like, while we wholeheartedly commit ourselves to that, we're always also trying to open ourselves up to this other aspect of reality where, wherever we are on the path is perfect. We're walking the path. There's nothing is lacking, which is such a wonderful, you know, when I finally woke up to that personally, I wanted to wake up to it. That was part of one of my goals on my path, was waking up to that, you know, and my sense of kind of frustration and inadequacy and, you know, pride mixed with disappointment. And then when I saw more clearly how, like, you know, like you said, it can never be other than what you are. And I was kind of like, oh, that's cool. I mean, and then you can continue on your path, but without that sense of inadequacy and urgency. I mean, there is still urgency, but not the same kind, I guess. So, how many of you feel like you do view your, you know, frame your practice as path?
Solely or in part, like you were saying?
Well, it doesn't have to be the only, I guess, but I mean, yeah. So this is like, I mean, so as I'm talking about this, you're kind of like, yeah, I'll do that.
We try.
And then one thing that, if a few people, you know, give you a moment to think about this, and then a few people might be willing to share, because on our online, our little online sangha, we talked about this topic. And then I asked people what their deepest aspiration is. And for me, I mean, it may not work like this for you, but I kind of imagine, you know, how would I operate on a daily basis? You know, and again, not putting aside, like, do I really think this is ever going to happen? Is this realistic? But, like, you know, the kind of thing that just, in my heart of hearts, what I feel like would honor that my deepest, you know, the principles of truth and beauty and compassion and, you know, the things that are most important to my heart. How would I act? How would I respond to the world? What kind of person would I be? And maybe when you think about this, maybe somebody else comes to mind, maybe a person who embodies this. But I feel like because of each of our karma, you know, the who we've been and the challenges we've faced and the strengths and weaknesses that we have, our kind of picture of the enlightened being has a different, or the kind that we really resonate with, like, honestly, like a perfect Buddha. But there's, if you think of it more in terms of like a perfect bodhisattva who has a particular skill set and, you know, particular interests or energies, that's usually what our hearts will resonate with more than just a kind of bland, you know, picture of perfection. So to think, let's take a few moments and think about your deepest aspiration. No holds barred. Is anyone willing to share? Yeah.
To continue on the Dharma path with increased wisdom and compassion for all whom I meet.
Mm. Thank you.
If I could do that, I don't know if that would be amazing.
More in terms of a bodhisattva, and there's a lot of work to do, and that if you can positively touch people periodically with what you do or say. I have a thing I do lately in the grocery, at the parking lot of the grocery store. I'll see an older person than I that's having a hard time with the shopping cart. So I intentionally go over and engage them in conversation and help them take the cart back so they don't have to. And so, I mean, it's a tiny thing, but it enlightens it. It makes a stranger happy. But it also, as a parent, there's a part of the bodhisattva that I love where you can sort of push at a cause. And hopefully you do it gracefully to benefit others. Yeah. So, yeah, I just think make contact and do it in a pleasant way, and that's huge, especially in our day and age when people are looking down instead of looking up.
Thank you.
I think my deepest aspiration is to discover that who I am is no different than Kanthiya. Mm.
I had probably 30 years of psychotherapy, and for various reasons, and I think I got better, but one of the things I know about the past was I was
I most embraced the times when I was either ecstatic or miserable, that the passion, the feeling was real. And it took me probably 20 of those 30 years to discover that there was an alternative, and it was contentment.
Mm.
And I was very elusive. It took me a while to experience it. But it's, as today as we've been going through this, I was thinking about the improvement, and it was a goal, and I felt like I really wanted to live in this present that allowed for contentment and a recognition of right action and right words, but without the striving. So I think my path is somewhere in there, my aspiration.
I mean, we all know what it's like to encounter somebody who's really, truly content. It's speaking of like a bodhisattva that just makes an impression. We can encounter them anywhere, just in the midst of, you know, usually they're just like a waiter or, you know, pumping your gas or something like, you know, and there's just an ease and contentment there that makes you just want to spend more time with them.
Love freely without preconditions or judgment.
I don't know, as each person is saying their thing, there's a part of me that, I mean, in a way, no, all of our aspirations kind of reflect each other's, you know. It's kind of like, oh yeah, that would be great. Were you going to say something, Mark?
I reserve the right to change over time, but right now I just feel like I want to be a good companion to the ones that are in front of me and around me.
Mm.
Mine came up, I just want to be present for every moment, and it sounds simple, but it's hard, and then I think it just interacts with all the others.
Yeah.
That's spoken, just to be, try to be truly present.
And I think these aspirations can be, they can be felt. I think that's probably true for most of us. We're not sitting there just kind of intellectually describing, well, I would like to be somebody who could solve math problems really quickly. I mean, it's not, that's not what it's about. It's like we kind of connect with either, I don't know where the aspiration lives, but you know, that sometimes it's a memory of a way somebody acts, or where we've managed to act, you know, like you said, like when, you know, that kind of worked. You know, moments of insight or moments where we just kind of happened to be that way, the way that, more like the way we wanted to be. And that's where we kind of feel it in the body, these aspirations. And I feel like that's part of the, for me, that's part of cultivating the samvega, the spiritual urgency. It's not a negative thing. It's not a, like, I only live so long and, you know, so many shortcomings I still have to overcome. You know, it's not that. It's, if you think about these, you know, you call to mind and body your aspiration, it's, I don't know, then you're like, you only got so much time. Let's get working on it. You know, that it makes us kind of want to keep going. So I'll leave it there. Thank you all for coming.